Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Historian David McCullough once said, "It is a sad, sad, but true fact that the literacy rate in the state of Massachusetts in 1798 was higher than it is in 1998. And an article in this week's New Yorker says reading books is so much on the decline that it could soon change the texture of society. We will talk first to David McCullough and then to New Yorker writer Caleb Crane. McCullough has a new illustrated and boxed edition of his bestseller 1776. And yeah, it makes an impressive looking gift. But he is also speaking out in response to a new federal study linking a decline in student test scores to a decline in time spent reading. David McCullough, it's great to have you here again. Welcome back to WNYC. Happy holidays.
Thank you very much, and the same to you.
What is this new federal study?
Well, I'm not as familiar with it as I should be. What concerns me is that I have been teaching, lecturing, visiting colleges and universities and high schools all over the country, increasingly over the last 10 to 5 years, and I see all kinds of signs that we are, alas, providing an inadequate education. I have been particularly struck, because it's my field, at the level of historical illiteracy among young people who are, we assume, educated and are not. And it's real, it's serious, it's getting better some places, but alas, much of the country is declining still further.
Let me read for our
listeners. I feel very strongly that we are what we read, and that reading is essential to education, always has been. And since the advent of movable type, the world has changed beyond our capacity to really even grasp how much it's changed. And we had a period where publishers and educators were saying that people, young people today, don't like to read. They don't like books, and therefore we have to increase the size of the print. We have to make them easier to read, dumb down the vocabulary, and so forth. And that went on for about 20 years. And then along came Harry Potter and just blew all that conventional wisdom out of the water, because young people, clearly, it's been demonstrated by Ms. Rowling, will read if what they are given to read is compelling.
Well, we see, of course, the Harry Potter phenomenon. We see Oprah Winfrey's book club. That's a phenomenon. And yet this federal study found that fewer than half of Americans over 18 read novels or short stories or plays or poetry. And this is down from years past.
I was stunned by it. When I read in the papers, and I remember years ago reading a statistic, I can't remember what exactly it was, how many people in the country had never set foot in a bookstore. Now, that's changed tremendously with the advent of Barnes & Noble and Borders and other mass bookstores. And there's never been a greater selection of what to read. That's the irony of it.
And yet, YouTube notwithstanding, the internet is very much a reading and writing-based experience. So is your concern not that people are reading less, but that they're reading less of the right kind of stuff?
I'm very concerned that they're reading less of the right kind of stuff, but I'm also, I suppose it's my generation, I also believe in the book. I believe that books, as a tangible physical object, provide something that nothing else can or will. In that they can be carried with us, they can be picked up later on, taken down from the shelf, read 10 years later. They become part of the furnishings of our lives, literally. And the quality of what we read, and particularly the quality of what our children read or our grandchildren, is of the utmost importance. Good writing always gets through to readers, always. And classics are classics because they stand the test of time. People keep on wanting to read them. It's not just because professors are requiring their students to read them. They are there because they speak to the essentials of the human condition generation after generation after generation.
And you've written quite a bit about how the founding fathers immersed themselves in reading the classics. But
absolutely,
but not to be...
Including, I think this is so important. I've been struck by it again and again. Those founders who never had the benefit of an education, George Washington is the most notable, but there are others, Henry Knox, Nathaniel Greene, never stopped reading. And read seriously all their lives.
I want to get your reaction, though, to a Wall Street Journal editorial that was published last month, right around the time that both this federal National Endowment for the Arts study that we've been talking about came out, and Amazon.com released the Kindle, which is their electronic reading device. Daniel Henninger in the journal wrote, "One criticism of the NEA studies is that they don't capture the new ways people read away from work. This means the endowment doesn't validate new pastimes, such as reading text messages on cell phone screens. Add the input-output of text messaging to the database of readers, and the daily voluntary reading time likely rises from 7 minutes to 6 or 7 hours. Is this literacy?" he asks. "In 50 years, no one may ask." What do you think about that?
I think there's a tendency to confuse information with learning. Information is valuable, it's essential, it saves time, it saves money, it's convenient, and so forth and so on, but it isn't learning. I don't know that people are reading their electronic devices in order to understand Walt Whitman or to read the poetry or the literature or the fiction, the drama of today. I rather doubt it. And I think that what we stand to lose are those writers, those thinkers who are speaking to the essentials of the human spirit, the essentials of the human heart. And if that goes, what kind of a civilization will we have?
Mary in Westbrook has a thought about that. Mary, you're on WNYC. Parent of a second grader, I understand?
Well, into elementary school. The kids have passed on, though. They're a little bit older. But my elementary school district has something called the 100-book challenge. And the children are required to read for 15 minutes every day. It has to be 15 minutes. And then you have to sign a step in a log. So reading that was just sort of naturally occurring around the house turned into, "Mom, is my 15 minutes up yet?" And I know I'm not the only parent that it just drove me crazy. One way to get your kids to read is to not have cable TV. That's the easiest thing to do. But this, I think it's a No Child Left Behind thing. You know, what they're doing in the schools, instead of, and these books were stupid. They were just ridiculously idiotic, like old primers. And I just...
Right. Well, there are a lot of simple, short, and a lot of school districts do that. As you know, they have the 100-book challenge for kids at that age. Obviously, a lot of short books trying to require reading 15, 20 minutes a day. And you say it just turned it into a chore and didn't develop the love of reading. I wonder what Linda in West Caldwell thinks about that, who is a children's librarian. Is that right, Linda?
Yeah, that's right. My concern, what I've seen with my own kids and with kids around me, is that there's such a push. I live in a district where it's a good school district, but the thing is the kids are supposed to be doing everything to get into college. And education and reading are just secondary. You know, they're taking acting lessons when they're 4 years old. And it's cultural. It's really cultural. It's the parents aren't reading, and they're not reading to their kids. They bring into the library when they're infants. It's like, okay, check mark. You know, I've done that. And then when they learn to read, they've read. It's not something you continue to do.
What about the 100 books
challenge?
I'd like
to just, if I may chime in, I would like to say that I have 18 grandchildren, five mothers, five fathers, and everything you're saying, they would bear out. They would substantiate. That's exactly what they are so upset about.
Right, right, yeah.
And Linda, what do you think the implications are for who we are as a society, for what kind of human beings this next generation is going to become?
I don't know. I think a lot of this is just obsessed. Everybody wants their kids to get into a great college and make a lot of money. And the concept, you know, I know for my father's generation, who was very lucky to go to college on the VA loan, it was about getting an education to be an educated person, not necessarily to just get a great job.
I'd like to just mention something that means so much to me. One of my closest friends and a man I admired more than almost anyone I ever knew was the writer Paul Horgan. Paul Horgan never went to college, and yet he was the most cultivated, the most deeply, widely read man I ever knew. And he used to say, when he saw people, when he'd greet friends, he'd say, instead of saying, "How are you?" he'd say, "What are you reading?" Now, he wasn't asking that in order to test you. He was asking that to get going on a subject of mutual enthusiasm, to get going on something that he might learn from. I think that that's a very healthy way to look at it. What are you reading? We are what we're reading right now as much as we were what we were reading when we were in grade school or high school. It goes on. It's a lifelong thing. That's a big part of it. And it isn't just to get into college now. It's to continue to grow and have curiosity and the love of literature for the rest of your life.
Steve in North Bergen, you're on WNYC with historian David McCullough. Hi, Steve.
Hey, gentlemen. How's it going?
All right.
I wanted to comment about I'm an early adopter of the Amazon Kindle and really bought it on a whim by accident, didn't even know about it, and ended up...
What is it? How does it work? Is it just a frame for an electronic book?
Well, it is and it isn't. I mean, the first thing they did with the book part is they made the thing called electronic ink, which makes it look like you're reading more of a page on a book as opposed to a screen. But it is a screen. But the nice part about the device is that you can get a book right on the device. It's got a built-in cell phone technology. So, for instance, in the last couple weeks, my father was in the hospital, and I spent a lot of time with him, and just reading books, sitting there, and being able to order a second one, a third one, and also the New York Times. And what it did was it allowed me to, well, what they tell you is carry 80,000 titles in one convenient package, and always have the second book available. So I was, my comment is that Amazon really should be applauded for bringing new technology into old-fashioned reading, promoting books, and obviously they've got a business model, but good for them, because I think this type of device should be promoted.
So when we do our call-in in about 20 minutes on cool holiday gifts that you've discovered this Christmas season, maybe we'll replay your call on the Amazon Kindle electronic book device. Thank you very much for calling in, Steve. And David McCullough, we got to go in a minute, but any thought about that or anything else you want to say?
I think that people who love books love them for lots of reasons. There's a tactile appeal to them, the binding, the graphics, the paper, the illustrations, if it's illustrated, and the pride in possession, the pride of having a marvelous book that's changed your life, still there on your own shelf, and the capacity to hand it to a child or a grandchild and say, "Read this, you're going to love it."
By the way, David, what are you reading?
Right now I'm reading Langston Hughes' autobiography.
David McCullough has written a new illustrated and boxed edition of his bestseller, 1776. Not a bad gift itself. It's big. It's incredibly illustrated with documents as well as pictures from the time. David McCullough, thanks so much for coming on with us and talking about reading.
Thank you very much. I've enjoyed it.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And we continue this discussion in a minute with the writer of a New Yorker magazine article this week who envisions what the brain might be like in a world without reading and what our culture might be like as well. It's going to be interesting. Stay with us.